Ah, splendid, splendid. Fergus seems to be fashionably late. Maybe he'll probably burst in on Emma Street likewise. But if not, we'll continue ever onwards because, Joe, what is the critical part of the programme that we've reached now immediately after the news? Is it something to do with the weather?
The weather,
yeah,
thank you.
Which obviously is going to be delivered for us from the magical world of Gibraltar via, indeed, Gabriella. I think that's your cue, Gabriella.
I like that, the magical world of Gibraltar. But yep, the weather today for Lincoln from Gibraltar is highs of 23 degrees centigrade, lows of 15 degrees centigrade, and it will be a sunny day with intervals and a great breeze. A gentle breeze.
And a great...
that messed up a bit, yeah.
It's a great gentle breeze, that's what we're
looking
for.
It's a great gentle breeze. Yeah. Not a great breeze, a gentle breeze.
Yeah, tardigrades are on the moon. I thought they were actually on the USS Discovery from the Star Trek Discovery series. But no, those are bigger tardigrades. And we might be talking about that in the second episode of From Mountains to Molecules. Who knows? Could be a bizarre routine there. Did you notice actually said fashionably late and here he is? You know, it's sort of bursting in like some kind of crazed sort of routine. What's been happening in Gibraltar, Gabriella? You can talk whilst Finn gets himself sorted down because who knows? He could do himself an injury the way he's sort of coming through the door at this particular stage.
A few things over like the past couple weeks. So we had some paddle boarders go from Gibraltar to Morocco. So they travelled 18 kilometres across the strait on a paddle board. They think they've broken some record. I don't know if anyone else has ever stand up paddled 18 kilometres from one continent to another, so that's something.
It isn't something. And Joe, have you paddle boarded 18 kilometres or have you done any paddle boarding at all?
I haven't done any paddle boarding. I like kayaking, I could do that, but I'm not sure about standing up for 18 hours paddleboarding.
Yeah. Now, Fergus, obviously, because he paddleboarded this morning. 18 kilometres. 18 kilometres. Well, it could be 18 hours, a kilometre per hour, you know. So, paddleboarding in Leicester? Probably not.
No. No way to go.
I see that the British Airways system outage has affected Gibraltar passengers. British Airways passengers flying to and from Gibraltar are enduring either cancellations or delays, as it's all down to computing. They're letting us down, all these computer systems.
We've had a few issues on flights. There was also a flight that was destined to go to Gibraltar that was diverted to Bordeaux because of a rowdy couple. So they ended up, what would usually be about a 2-3 hour flight ended up becoming 6 hours on the airplane. So not, I think Gibraltarians are having, and I think everyone to be fair as well, the UK are having tricky times right now travelling.
Well, at the end of the day, you've got to square the travel to Gibraltar, the possibility of actually maybe catching a glimpse of Gabriella Peralta on her way to the Gibraltar Chronicle. It's awesome. I know that there are tourist buses already that are kind of in action, effectively, and there are lots of Peralta fans. We call them the Peralta Nets, who effectively are kind of desperately sort of keen to catch a glimpse. But it's squaring that up against carbon footprint and other sort of issues and so on. I don't know. It's a difficult one to actually call on. Never mind. So, tardigrades on the moon. Gabriella, were you aware of this story that it may well be that thanks to Israel crash landing into the moon? Honestly, were they not looking where they were going? What's going to happen in terms of claims that little animal species, teeny tiny animals, who are very well able to actually withstand desiccation and actually go into hibernation or the form of hibernation for a long time, could now be actually occupying the moon and effectively claim it as their planet.
It's like an occupying force. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. But, not wearing her NASA shirt.
Quite cool. Would they be classed as aliens?
Exactly. Maybe the aliens we've created ourselves. Isn't that right? Usually wearing a NASA shirt, but not today. Josephine.
Yeah, so that these are fascinating creatures. They're actually the first known animal to survive in outer space. So they actually survived for 10 days in the hard vacuum of space and solar radiation. So on the moon, it's probably a bit of a doddle for them.
Yeah. First dog in space, of course, was...
Leica.
Yes, well done, Leica Alsatian. Sadly, didn't make it back. And I believe that was from the Union of the Soviet Socialist Republics when it existed. And of course, from the USA, I believe it was a chimpanzee who went up.
He also
a bit of an end to things from that point of view. Curiously, you know, life continues in its own way, and I suppose you could say, well, there was precedent for this. Just teasing ahead again, possibly to edition two of From Mountains to Molecules, when actually one of the ways in which alternating current and direct current was actually tested was actually electrocuting animals. Electrocuting elephants, for goodness sake! Not good. Gabriella, what are you doing today at the Gibraltar Chronicle?
What am I doing?
It's a metaphysical question, effectively, you know, designed for any journalist to actually ask themselves the question, usually around about midday, what am I doing with my life here at the Gibraltar Chronicle?
The editor's away, so...
Nice.
That means that...
Party time?
No, that means that I have to do it. So it's been long days for me the past week and a half, so I think I've been working till about 9 most days, so today will be more of the same, finding stories, figuring out what to put on the front, and sorting out all the copy. So
it's
I'm
just
not
never ending. It's
out
never
and about
ending.
As much the past couple of weeks. Well, I've been cooped up, checking everything and hoping that there are no mistakes and I get no phone calls the next day.
It's a lot worse when you get a friendly neighbourhood media station like Siren Radio basically says, you missed an apostrophe out, you spelled this wrong, etc. These things, sent to try. Gabriella, it has been awesome. Who would you like to ask you the last two questions? Would it be transfer day deadline worrying Leicester City supporter Fergus? Yeah, I know it's transfer day deadline,
it
Fergus. Yeah, 5 p.m. British Mean Time.
It's too early
today. Whoa!
Well, that happened to midnight.
Nope. That's because Jim White obviously has a full-time radio show now on another radio station, so he can't just be seen outside buildings and various other bits and pieces. And actually, Joe doesn't care. So yeah, so transfer deadline day, it'd be meaningless, really. Just what's the point? So who would you like to ask you those two questions, Joe or Fergus?
Oh, how about we have one from
nice.
One and then...
Good and, good and democratic. Dominic Cumming, are you listening? That's democracy in action, you see. Anyway, not somebody who's found in contempt of the whole thing. Let's move on then. So, one from Fergus.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephone link with us this morning?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have, thank you.
Good.
Would you like to join us again?
I will, hopefully next week.
Splendid. That's just perfection in so many words. In fact, it's just one word, really. Perfection. Three syllables, though. Thank you. Those who remember when Maria McKee's Show Me Heaven was simply acknowledged as a theme to a Tom Cruise movie all about driving very, very fast. Remember the movie? Days of Thunder.
I remember that. I enjoyed that. Robert Duvall.
Anyway, talking about Days of Thunder, as Richard Fitzwilliams waits in the wings to be brought in magnificent ways, can you cast your mind back, Fergus, to the midweek dive last evening, indeed Wednesday evening, now up online, of course, yes. When Phil Leonis actually instructed us specifically to ask a question of Richard. Can you remember what that question was?
He'd noticed that Richard had been a recent contributor on a documentary called Princes at War, and he wanted to know what that title meant exactly.
Princes at War, or as we like to say for animal-friendly people, PAW, P-A-W, Princes at War. And he was intrigued, was Phil. We offered him the chance of coming on today, but it is after midnight, and he is recuperating after his recent surgery, so I said, just ask the question for me. In an American accent, obviously. So that's what we're doing, Richard Fitzwilliams. Straight to you, Princes at War. And I know you're going to go on to Vogue and Meghan and all sorts of other bits and pieces, but let's start with that.
Yes, indeed. I do have to say, firstly, how is Phil? Because I saw the most alarming photograph recently where, I mean, it really was.
I know.
Hardly knew what to say. Things I do hope are improving.
Richard, at the end of the day, like Phil Leonis, you are midweek drivettes, and that engages with a certain immunisation factor. So despite the fact that someone looks so good, he's good. And indeed, Fergus, I think last night he was sounding good as well.
Yeah, he was in good spirits, definitely.
He was very much in good... Well, I mean, you're saying good spirits as you could actually be when he spends 5 or 10 minutes actually
bemoaning the... I just remembered what we talked about yesterday.
The gun laws in America. I mean, that would be a case, Fergus, of possibly us rewriting history, which is not the case at all, really. So, but other than that, yes, his health, thank the Lord, is good. So, yes.
Well, I am delighted to hear it, because anything ocular, it's just too terrifying, I find. Yeah. But, yes, may I clarify, it's Princes at War? Because that is what I was, in fact, being interviewed by Channel 5. The documentary goes out, indeed, it's not the coming Saturday, but the Saturday after. And what's interesting is there will be different views as to whether or not William and Harry have some feud. I don't believe they have. I believe it's a media invention. But I do believe that a lot of the events that have happened over the last couple of years have played into that narrative, because some things have been rumours impossible to prove or disprove, and other things have been very badly handled. So it's a mix, and it's interesting to discuss it. But what I did discover, and I mean, you all know a lot of this, but it was interesting just to, as it were, think about it for a few days. What is absolutely extraordinary is the amount they've actually got in common. It's not just the obvious deep affection for Diana. Issues such as mental health, I mean, bringing that up, no celebrity would touch it, apparently, but, I mean, it is quite extraordinary what they've done in the land of the stiff upper lip. You give interviews, and Harry's speeches and interviews get more publicity than William's, but there's no question that they've done tremendously well on that issue. And the environment, too, and also, I mean, there are similarities. If you look at their military careers, Harry 10 years, William 7, and, of course, Invictus, which is just remarkable. Love of Africa, their acceptance and affection for Camilla, their excellence as soft power ambassadors.
It's such a shame the wives can't get on, though, isn't it, really, so we're told. It's such a shame that, you know...
This business, I think that what I was pointing out, which I hope will get into the final cut, because you never know. And that
Richard, just get in touch with Channel 5 and say, I'm sorry, I'd like to do the whole interview again. I'm just not happy with that. Sorry. It's an in-joke here. We won't go any further.
What I was saying was that it's so easy to be wise, of course, in retrospect. I mean, obviously it is. But from the very beginning, I mean, why we all bought into the Fab Four and shouldn't have was because they were so close when they were brothers, because it worked when Kate joined, but it was when Meghan joined, it was perfectly obvious that if you lived, as was intended, as neighbours, and the same office, and the same foundation, heaven knows you're pushing it far. I mean, there was no space for Harry and Meghan in that at all, and given the differences, as you've just been talking about, in the background of the Duchesses, it was totally impractical, unless people were, well, in exceptional circumstances. But it was and then the way they'd had to detach themselves has caused so much of the publicity that have given rise to this. So, again, there's so many factors in play here. It is an interesting one. I genuinely believe that they are close, but I think also that Harry's new age... I mean, this brings us to Vogue. It's actually...
Briefly, Richard, I just have to say, we had a little comment from Joe there. Is this the sequel to Princesses at War? ? Or is that something to come? I mean, I can see a whole series coming out here.
There is a whole series, and Princesses at War came out early in the year. I didn't happen to see it.
Personally, I would say that actually the cowdre room in the In and Out Club has never looked better. So that's it. You've set it off perfectly. It's worth watching on August the 17th just for that.
Well, ultra perspicacious. It so happens that the rest of the club is being refurbished, but that just has been. So you see, Alex notices everything. There's nothing that escapes him.
Well, we'd like to feel completeness is all. Let's move on to striking the pose, as Madonna once said, and let's go for a Meghan edited Vogue edition with women who we should really care about, even though one of them actually used to run Wonga, which possibly is a little bit ethically dubious, but what the hey.
Well, the who's who side of it. I was interviewed in Channel 7 at Sunrise in Australia on this, and they were saying, what about the Queen and so forth. It's interesting. I once edited, of course, as you remember, the International Who's Who for over 20 years. The point is, if you look at these lists, they're always fun, because that wasn't what Meghan was trying to do. She didn't include Michelle Obama or Hillary Clinton or Dame Judi Dench or Naomi Campbell on that list. She was talking, they were young radicals who were linked to causes, a lot of them we didn't know, and it gave them a lift up, just as that magazine. I mean, it's just £2 and they'll sell millions. The problem with the whole guest editorship, which has taken us 7 months, is that it plays to a certain agenda, and I was talking about this, but again, I have no idea what will or won't appear in the program, and that is that if you only appeal to millennials, if you have interviews, for example, Harry's two kids, Max, to save the planet, I mean, it's taken as a sort of implied criticism of Kate, who has three and conceivably could have four, according to rumors. I have no idea. But the point was, if he has become very new age, and there is a problem, the problem is that they've got a unique charitable potential. The Sussex brand has got seismic reach, and it will have this in the quest of the Commonwealth. It will also have this abroad, especially in the United States. Here's the problem: you shouldn't neglect home base. Firstly, that's where taxpayers' money pays for the restoration of your home, 2.4 million. I realise that the technicalities of that.
It's a snip compared to the average salary of a Premiership footballer. I mean, it's like, 2 or 3 weeks wages for most sort of people if they work for Man City, really. So
the point is that there is a lot of public interest in this aspect of it, and there's more to come in the next year's Royal Accounts. But your Royal Patronage is all the rest of it here. I think they'll have some abroad. I think they will work something where they spend some time, but how much and in what way, especially with security considerations and especially with Archie's schooling, it isn't going to be easy abroad. But the point is to use or utilize their potential for the best and the most extraordinary charitable results. I mean, that we've seen Paris Saint-Barlin and Invictus, and also their championing, as you know, and as Vogue does, female empowerment and diversity and feminism. But there's always also a danger here, because I think they'll be superb so long as they're able to do things their own way. I do think there are going to be difficulties.
Okay, let's just briefly open it up then. Joe, who actually Richard, Joe has also just revealed that her uncle is in Who's Who.
Yeah, he's a nuclear physicist, so you might have come across his name while you've been doing that.
And the nuclear physicist's name is?
Dennis Fakeley.
Dennis Fakeley. Richard, obviously, instant recall would say, oh, yes, I remember Dennis Fakeley, nuclear physicist.
Well, I mean, the international history, which I admittedly left 20 years ago, there were 20,000 names, so you must...
Exactly. Richard, we know it's like encyclopedic. It's every time from that point of view. Anyway...
No, it is no such thing. if you edited it, would remember all 20,000. Yes, and I take that.
I'm actually sort of just shocked to actually reveal that I have spotted a typo that I've put up and has been shared. But I'll explain what it is in a few moments' time. Okay. Joe, your thoughts on the Vogue editorship, the guest editorship, obviously, of the Sussex fantastic individual who is Meghan?
Well, I think it's quite nice that she's doing it, but I'm not. I like the royal family, but I'm not particularly... Yeah, I don't really follow celebrity stuff, really.
Fergus?
We're hearing about this. I remember, I think it was Harry guest edited a magazine or something, and maybe he did an interview with Obama.
He guest edited the Today programme.
Yeah, that was it. He did an interview with Obama,
And if it was Harry back in the day, he probably would have done something like Loaded or FHM or something. You know, that was in the times where lads were lads in all sorts of ways, really, as opposed
to billiards, you mean, or strip poker, or whatever.
Precisely. But any thoughts on Vogue? I mean, magazine possibly you don't take, Fergus. I mean, I'm not casting any aspersions here, but maybe we're not target audience.
No, I don't really. But she's been getting the opportunity to edit it. You know, it's a big deal to be able to say we've got the Duchess of Sussex, you know, to be able to go on to do it. Probably going to sell a lot of copies, you know.
It's like when Nuts magazine could get Katie Price to edit that whole thing, really.
I'm glad to say Katie Price had nothing to do with it.
No.
But different
audiences, different markets. And as Vogue is still going, obviously, Nuts ceased
to be. But you've got to be, when it comes to different audiences, different markets, you also got to, as I say, it's only fair that most of it is directed with the messages they want, but there was none of it that was directed to more conventional areas. And I do think that was a mistake, because one of the, I don't know what will be on the cutting room floor, but one of the extraordinary things is that when George Clooney and Oprah Winfrey were complaining that Meghan was getting dreadful publicity similar to Princess Diana, which is absolute nonsense. I mean, the paparazzi, thankfully, have had their teeth drawn, or they're still active and dangerous.
They're still stirring, Richard.
There's nothing remotely the way it was. But at that time, the two, well, there were some cynical columnists, yes, and there were appalling trolls online. Also, her family, part, of course, from her beloved Doria, my mother, were appalling. But at that time, the press coverage was hagiographic. Because of certain instances this year, the way Archie's birth was handled, the christening and so on, most of the coverage now is hostile or is critical. And that is a problem.
Let's hold it there, because clearly things will develop. We need a short musical break, very short musical break, Richard, before we actually move into movie reviews. And I'm sorry, but I'm quoting this from Richard's Facebook page, as you can see. Joe, last week, of course, review the dreadful The Current War. The dreadful The Current War, despite its wonderful cast in Marianne and Leonard. This was, as I say, in the typo where, unfortunately, I spelt Llewellyn incorrectly. I've corrected it since then. But then I can offset that.
That's how Llewellyn got...
It's dreadful. But at the same time, you also refer to Leonard Cohen as Leonard Chen. So I feel we're equal. It's equal on that basis. One all. It's the excitement of social media. Just putting that whole thing up there. In case people are wondering on the post, that's a wonderful pig at the pig racing event at the York Maze. And I'm the one with the yellow daub on the snout. So just in case people are there. Anyway, to take us around to maybe a brief discussion on why Josephine Westlake actually likes the current war. And of course, two new movies that Richard is going to be revealing to us in a few seconds. We've already alluded to one of them, possibly a Shaw, possibly a Hobbs will actually be in there. I think a little smidgen of Nina Simone. Taken from the 21st century's answer to Lawrence of Arabia, Guy Ritchie's Man from U.N.C.L.E. Nina Simone, Take Care of Business, classic. I mean, the opening, the closing trailers where, of course, you have Hugh Grant as Mr. Waverley bidding farewell to Henry Cavill as Napoleon Solo and Armie Hammer as Ilya Kuryakin, and Take Care of Business for me. Genius filmmaking, I'm sure you'll agree, Richard, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
Exactly. Let's move on to... Well, before we talk about Luke and, indeed, Deckard, Hobbs and Shaw, would you like to just have a little right of reply? Because I think it's fair to say, on the basis, I think Fergus was in the same line as myself, we listened to Richard and we have not seen The Current War because we thought, we trust Richard, up to a point. We go with that. You have, and your thoughts are?
I actually really liked it. I think... I can understand where you're coming from in that if you aren't interested or not particularly interested in history of the of electricity or electricity itself, and if you don't understand the difference between AC and DC and all the rest of it, I think it would probably go over your head or just lack. It doesn't have a lot of pace.
So the fact that DC can really only, it's only good to actually service about a 1 mile area, and yet, with smart cars, with all the rest of it, DC is staging a comeback, not just Washington as well.
Well, actually, they named... So Tesla, the company, is actually named after, obviously, Nikola Tesla. Sadly, Nikola Tesla actually died in poverty.
Yeah, but he was a gambler.
It was very sad.
He was a gambler.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things. He's an absolute genius.
He was from Croatia.
That's one of the things.
I have to admit,
yeah.
I'd never heard of him. I really...
Richard, dear Lord.
One of the most famous physicists.
You mean you didn't see him being played by David Bowie in The Prestige?
Unbelievable.
I mean that The Prestige was an overrated movie.
Whoa!
there you have it. I just think it was. I thought that would stir things up. It was, because it got. I bet it's very high on Rotten Tomatoes, but the facts were that Michael Caine, too, I seem to remember.
Well, to the extent that Fergus, when he saw what you're reviewing up next, Richard, was saying, this is going to be interesting and fun. I saw the trailers of this, I thought, I just don't know. I just don't. It just doesn't appeal to me at all. But Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham. Where do you think Rich is going to go, first of all, Joe? Hobbs and Shaw? Do you think he's going to go, yeah, this is it. It's the best movie since Anne of a Thousand Days, which I chose to watch over the weekend rather than going to see the current war, or indeed Henry Hull in Werewolf of London.
Why, for heaven's sake, a werewolf would know what to do with the celluloid that, in fact, included Anne of a Thousand Days.
Look, Richard Burton and Olivia, not Olivia de Havilland.
Genevieve Bujold.
Exactly.
Yes, but yeah. Yes, I have a little neck, and that was a touching moment. But my goodness me, what a wasted opportunity, because it was a terribly static film, and it was a very long time ago, and I bet it looks it now. In fact, no, I
remember 1970 as though it was yesterday. I thought it was wonderful, well made.
If you had asked me, I would have suggested The Other Boleyn Girl.
Yeah.
That would have been one to see, and indeed the television version, where you really had the fear of Henry's court. And what it was like, and that period. Well, Man for All Seasons, you know, of course, but I mean, there are a whole series of films.
Anthony Quayle as Cardinal Wolsey, magnificent. But anyway, let's move on. Joe, what do you think Rich is going to say about Hobbs and Shaw?
I don't know what Rich is going to say about this one, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Fergus.
As I said yesterday, I thought...
Could go anyway. A bit like the movie. Okay, Richard, the floor is yours. Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Indeed, and it's interesting. I've just had the box office figures for the current success or otherwise of various movies, and this is so far ahead of anything else. I mean, Animals, which we're coming to next, is number four. But it is just roaring ahead, and the reason is that it's not the sort of movie I normally love, but, and if you like, I mean, it's pretty formulaic. After all, The Rock, I've always had a weakness for The Rock. I mean, I admit this on Drive, I say this, it is true. He was Hercules, and in a mediocre movie, he certainly looked the part.
And not, of course, Richard, to be confused with Kim Darroch, who, of course, was the former United Kingdom ambassador, who I've said it's caused that confusion. That's the reason it wasn't Dwayne Darroch, it was Kim Darroch. Bit of a challenge there.
How very generous of you to point that out. Also, the facts are that I mean, I saw Baywatch and The Rock was in it, and I don't know.
Awesome movie.
Didn't like it. Well, but I don't. What on earth did people expect? He gave them what they expected, and this is what happens here. But what is good about this movie? And you can see the way the audience were responding to this, which really worked, is that the person or persons writing the script, they were very often very funny. Unless you don't get or don't tend to get in movies where the two top characters, in case, I mean, Luke Hobbs, played by, obviously, The Rock, an American security operative, and Deckard Shaw, played by Jason Statham, the rivalry between the two of them and also the insults they throw at each other is very, very funny. I have to say that it does get a little tedious when they kill quite as many persons of, villains as they do. I haven't seen so many villains killed since, oh, heaven knows when. You think of Where Eagles Dare and the numbers of Germans who die in that. They are the best of enemies, and then there's the cyber genetically enhanced, I quote, because it's not my field, a Pol Pot-like figure, because if you get rid of the old, there's a virus involved in this, and if released in the world, it will destroy those who can't really cope for the good of the population. There's Brixton Laurie, played by Idris Elba. He'll take down the weak, and he'll also first have to meet the MI6 agent. Now, Hattie Shaw is played by Vanessa Kirby. Vanessa Kirby is Princess Margaret in The Crown. Mind you, The Crown, when it comes out next, and the new date has just been released, and I mention this is November the 17th. Anyway, we have The Rock and also his reluctant partner have to go to various exotic relations to take down this particular evil. Much of it is set in London, and there are some unbelievable filming some of the stunts, particularly climactically, but also how you get under a bus and all of this. Exotic locations do include Samoa and a particularly ridiculous ending, but don't let's worry about that. The point is that along the way, there's a hell of a lot to enjoy. The two top characters are very well cast. Vanessa Kirby is absolutely gorgeous. And, I mean, this was a movie. It's never subtle, but there's a lot to laugh at, and it's actually quite exciting. It's too long at 2.25 hours, but it's very good fun. And the franchise of 8 films, and it's a while since I've seen a Fast and Furious movie, has now grossed $5 billion.
And will it serve as an effective kickstarter for Dwayne Johnson's campaign to take over from Donald Trump in the 2024 American presidential elections?
It will, unquestionably.
Nice. just interesting thoughts. Okay, that I presume has not dissuaded you from checking out Hobbs and Shaw then, Joe?
No, definitely not. I think the only controversial thing, there's two things with it, is one, are we going to get justice for Han?
Justice for Han.
Big thing. Mm. And the other one is, obviously this has delayed the actual Fast and Furious movie by a year. So
that's because it's so Fast and Furious, you can't have two Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
Actually, you did. It was the sequel to number one.
Yeah.
Fergus.
It's not the type of thing that I normally go for, but I agree with Richard. Like, The Rock, it's amazing that where he came from, really, to go from being a thing that's like the world of professional wrestling to being the world's highest grossing actor at the moment.
Is Stone Cold Steve Austin not so much, really?
No, Hulk Hogan neither, no Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
But he is just exudes charisma, you see, in interviews and everything, really. I think it's a great partnership for himself and Statham. Statham's rarely not entertaining, and I can see why it's making a lot of money, because they've got a formula which they know is going to work. So
yes, it does work, and also, as you say, he's very likable. There's a charm about him, because I mean, he flexes his pecs from time to time, but my goodness me, I mean, it's one of those movies that, you know, I didn't think I'd enjoy it any like as much as I did, but the audience really were rapt, and you could feel that, and it was pretty full.
And so we move on to not the Northern Band of the Animals with House of the Rising Sun, but something else which also deals with not furry friends either in all sorts of ways, but is probably, Richard, maybe best described as an art house movie. I'm not being pejorative. It's just a case of it's not necessarily going to get the kind of box office figures that Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw is getting.
It's number four, so this is roaring away. And yes, I mean, you'd normally think it might be reserved for art house, but in fact, it's broken through very well indeed. Directed by Sophie Hyde, it stars Laura, played by Halliday Granger, a struggling writer who works as a barista, and Tyler, played by Alia Shawkat, who is an American living in Dublin. They share a flat, which is owned by Tyler, and they hit the party scene. There are numbers of scenes of drugs and drink. Goodness me, they really have a lot of fun. And they have a close relationship. It's not sexual, but my goodness me, Tyler's best friend, I think, is probably white wine. Numbers of bits of fun and games. This is really living it up. Tyler's out of money, but nonetheless, she's got family with a sister, pregnant sister. Laura meets them, gets friendly with them, and I have to say, she gets engaged to a very, very serious guy. Here's the bit of fun. An actor I'd never heard of called Fra Fee plays Jim. He is a concert pianist, and as well, not quite the type, really isn't, that would appeal to Tyler. What happens to this relationship? How does it thrive? I would just offer up a clue that he doesn't look particularly prepossessing, and could she be more interested in a poet whom she meets, but also has rather curious tastes, or indeed called Marty, or and his group of friends, a hilarious scene there, take a send-up of literary pretensions. She's a struggling writer. Is there any chance she could get a career online, or does she go for Jim, even though she's unfaithful to him with Murphy? What happens? Who will last the distance with her, or indeed, and what will the future bring? It's set in Dublin. I have to say that the inspiration she needs, where does it come from? It's a very funny, fast-moving movie, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. First class, very funny, and it had thoroughly entertaining performances by Holiday Grainger and Alia Shawkat. Grainger's done so well in movies recently. Shawkat I didn't know, but the facts are that this movie is very popular because it is a delicious study of female friendship, and also it's got a feminist message, but it's more subtle than a lot of films which have laid it on with every male being evil and this sort of thing. I have seen movie after movie because, and quite rightly, it's been hard as a female director. There are more now, thank goodness, certainly more in the films I'm seeing, and the setting should be far, far, far more. But there is sometimes a formulaic aspect to movies that are feminist movies. In this case, it's gloriously and deliriously different.
Although we would put a little caveat on people who are actually looking to access the trailer via the internet thingy, that bizarrely, the wonderful algorithms that have actually been used, at the same time as we talk about a lively launch for Sophie Hyde's Animals and news about animals and Sophie Hyde, etc., if you actually click on the trailer there, you get The Lion King. That's not going to help, is it, really? You know, it's not a Disney movie at all.
I have recommended the Lion King.
Of course you have, but, you know,
I think it's terrific fun, but my good in a Disneyfied, an almost over Disneyfied Africa, maybe, but why quibble? But that is very funny. I can't imagine how that happened. But the word
sure
is spreading.
Heads will roll. Heads will roll. Joe, I mean, you're a witness to this. This is what you get. It's not.
Yeah,
it's
I think it's probably safer that way around than going on and trying to click on a Lion King
who
and
knows?
Getting this one.
Yeah, so who knows what could happen. Richard,
that's bizarre.
Slightly more extended than usual, but at the same time, the two final questions will be coming to you. But first, Animals. Fergus, will you be checking it out?
Oh, I might check it out. I've recognised Ali Shawkat from Arrested Development, popular comedy from a few years back. I think she does these kind of independent films. I haven't seen much of Holiday Grainger, but I think I've seen one or two of her films. But it looks intriguing.
Okay, Joe?
Not really actiony enough.
It's not, but they're sort of battle party animals, really. Hence the term animals. Okay, last two questions. Let's do one each, basically. Fergus, your first one.
Have you heard a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Oh, yes, it's been terrific fun. Mm-hmm.
Joe?
Would you like to join us again to do this?
I would indeed. I'm just off to Apocalypse Now, the final version, and that's in the IMAX cinema. That is an experience I'm looking forward to.
Well, there's nothing like the smell of napalm in the morning, Richard.
You're quite right.
And with the kind of temperatures we were having in central London recently, that's probably kind of going to be very apt. And so stay cool, stay air-conditioned, and we'll be with you in about 7 days from now, all being well.
Look forward to it.
Splendid. Time for George.
Me and Sam in the car, talking about America, heading to the wishing well. We've reached our last resort. I turned to him, said, man, help me out. I fear I'm on an island in an ocean full of change. Can't bring myself to dive into an ocean full of change. Am I losing touch? Am I losing touch now? He said, why, what a terrible time to be alive if you're prone to overthinking it. Why, what a terrible time to be alive if you're prone to second guessing it. Hey, pretty smiling people, we're all right together, we're all right together. Hey, pretty shining people, we're all right together, we're all right together. Took it in turns to dream about the lottery and what we might have done if we had entered and had won it. We're each convinced that nothing would have changed. But if this were the case, why is it a conversation anyway? Are we losing touch? Are we losing touch now? He said, why, what a terrible time to be alive if you're prone to overthinking it. Why, what a terrible time to be alive if you're prone to second guessing it.
Which is what you'd say after you've won a penalty shootout and you managed to actually get the Community Shield. Isn't that right, Ian?
Yes, it is.
Yay, exactly. Now, I know you're a Blythe Spartan supporting soul these days, but it's nice to know that Matt Ritchie, ex-Bournemouth, of course, is saying, look, Newcastle fans, get behind the boss. He's really good. It's good for the whole team, good for the whole town. The tune, of course, the city of Newcastle. And great news, Ian, looking at the all-time Premier League table, do you know where Newcastle United actually stand in the all-time Premier League table from 1992 to 2019 in terms of seasons in the Premier League and points sorted out? Do you know where you stand? Number eight.
Yes, that would be due to the Keegan years, I imagine.
And curiously, at number seven, Manchester City. So we have 1,000.
The pre-investment year.
We have 1,369 points. Newcastle have 1,272 points. The top sides, Manchester United, I think they're another side, Salford City, they're number one. Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Tottenham Hotspurs, and Everton are there. Leicester City, I know, Fergus, you're keen to find out. Well, Leicester City in this all-time Premier League table, 17th.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah,
17th. Who's 17th?
Leicester City.
That makes sense. I mean, one season aside, and yeah, recent years, you know.
Yes. I think if you did the same exercise between the years 1900 and 1910, we'd be top.
Yeah, look, Ian, you know that before 1992, football did not exist. So, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're told.
If you're my age, I should know perfectly well it did.
Yeah. Middlesbrough in 14th position, Sunderland in 15th position. Would you like to know who were bottom of the table in 47th, 48th and 49th position?
Yes, I would actually have it.
Could I have a guess in this?
Yeah, go.
Crystal Palace?
No.
Swindon?
No. Crystal Palace?
Oh, of course, those teams, yes.
Swindon. Crystal Palace in 21. Swindon, you're right, first.
Oldham?
Bottom of the league.
Barnsley?
Nope. Oldham were not in the Premiership. Barnsley and Blackpool.
Oldham were never in the Premiership. I thought they were.
No, I think they were in Division 1, but they never kind of managed to make the promise.
Ah, right. Yeah. They're in the top league.
These are fascinating things, which I know will not be featuring in from Manchester Molecules Volume 2 in the next size, unless, of course, we're talking about mathematical deviations and various other vectors.
Well, I actually did a whole thing on the mathematics behind football, so you never know.
And would you like to expand further or share the mathematics of football? Are we talking about the angles of corner kicks and so on? What?
Yeah, so the kinematics is it's applied maths in terms of physics of football, and it's all based around, obviously, Newton's laws and, speed, distance over time, all that stuff.
See, that's what they could probably deal with at Newcastle United, and indeed do with
they
as well as deal
they
with.
They try to get a picture of a goal, the most frequent goals, and we decided that in English football it was from crosses. But as English football played lots of crosses, it sort of self-defeating, I thought.
Yeah, never mind. Anyway, are you enjoying the weather, Ian, or is it just a case of it's Newcastle, it's always wonderful in Newcastle?
Well, it was fine yesterday, and this looks like it's promising today. I don't know. But we've had a bad spell up here. Some heavy showers and stuff.
Again, just from the point of view of Lincoln City fans who are keen to find out what a Newcastle United making of life of the universe, who knows, they might be playing each other next season if things work in certain ways. Maybe not. the overall line from the point of view of Newcastle, apparently the best pub in Newcastle, if you're a Toon fan, is the Strawberry Pub.
Mm. Oh, yes, that's just down, that's off the Gallagher end.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Apparently packed full of football memorabilia, serves lovely beer and has a cracking roof terrace if the sun is shining. Shameless plug. A cup of tea, £2.30 if you're wishing to have a cup of tea. And a pint in the ground, £3.90.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Is that in Newcastle United's ground?
This is Newcastle United.
£2.90, that's not bad for a football ground.
I think so. Interesting enough, you pay 30 pence more for your tea at Newcastle United than you do at Man City, because we only charge you £2.
Oh, better tea, though. Better tea.
You may well say that, and I know we wouldn't be replete without actually looking at Leicester City. A cup of tea at Leicester City, also £2. Hmm. So there we are. Best pub in Leicester, apparently the Huntsman.
I've never gone to it myself.
The Huntsman, which is a 15-minute walk away from the King
Power Station.
You get
free sugar in those ones, so.
Sugar is the new nicotine. I can't be doing with any kind of promotion of the S word on this particular programme, Ian. Have you not seen the kind of figures for the...
Statistically, you know, everyone who breathes in and out dies, so...
Yeah,
so you've got to stop.
That is true, of course, and you know, maybe it's a way of solving crises and all sorts of other bits and pieces. Never mind. Joe, any questions you want to put to Ian Lennox about his writing, which is awesome? I was very tempted to actually read an extract because I've been privileged to actually be sent a sneak preview of his latest fantastic novel. It features a character called Logan. Ish. Oh. Or maybe it doesn't. It features a character called Saint. Maybe it doesn't. It features
Marley.
As in Jacob.
Marley's ghost.
Exactly. That's all I can say. That's a teaser. But anyway, it's over to you, Joe.
Well, where do you get your ideas from for writing?
I'm not sure. I think it's basically when you get as old as I am, you've lived quite a bit of life, and certainly the job I've
You're not as old as Clint Eastwood. Now he's in his 90s now, so...
He stopped writing, though.
Yeah. How do you know?
Well, he hasn't been very successful because no one's heard of it. Anyway, it's just you sort of... I mean, I've interviewed and met thousands and thousands of characters during my life as a journalist, and met many other people who've done the same stories... and it's just distilling sort of experiences I've had in life, I think, really. And having a good imagination also. Some of the best characters you make come from nowhere. They're just completely fictitious. You have no idea they're going to be in the book at the start of it, and suddenly they disappear. And I don't know, it's a strange process. There's also a subconscious process that goes on. I wrote a book called The Brothers, but I started to write it about 40 years ago, I think it was.
Still actually your best from my point of view.
Probably. Oh, yeah. Must
still
be
my
so,
favourite.
Yeah. But the weakness at the time, as was pointed out to me by various literary figures, was the ending. Anyway, it didn't get published, so I didn't. I just put it this one side. And 30 or 40 years later, I started to write it again. And an ending just came to me like that. It's all been lying there dormant in my mind. And it's been a sort of subconscious gestation. And one academic wrote to me and said she thought it was the best part of the book, the ending. So it's just strange the way that
Ian,
my mind
be very
works.
Careful. I mean, if I was giving feedback to students and saying the best part of this essay is actually the ending, it could be taken in a number of ways, Joe. I'm sure you could
put the blooming thing down.
Okay. I mean, Fergus, if I give you a feedback, Fergus, the best thing about this literary portfolio is its ending, you know. You're going to sort of see it. You could,
you
could go either way.
You feel once you've finished it.
I'm sure it wasn't meant like that for you.
I don't know. Language is a very tricky thing. And who knows what
can be harsh.
Ian, have you noticed in Newcastle people cycling today?
People
fighting?
Cycling, not fighting.
Oh, cycling, no. Well, I mean, up the house, yes.
Because today apparently, the 8th of August, is indeed the annual Cycle to Work Day.
Really?
Yes, I'll be focusing on this in the second part of the production with a couple of fine folk, Adrian Warren from the Cycle to Work Alliance and Nick Chamberlain from British Cycling. Apparently, 25,000 people last year pledged to take part in Cycle to Work Day, and indeed today they're looking for even more from this point of view. So, I mean, Fergus, did you cycle to us today, or did you just I ran as fast as my legs could carry me?
On the bus.
I haven't rode a bike since I was about 14. So, although it is that time of year, because we did have Ride London at the weekend down in London, so, and with the Tour de France, so the summer is the time to be riding your bike.
Yeah. And Joe, are you a cyclist at all? Or?
I went through a phase last year of cycling a lot, so I went out and bought all the gear that goes with it.
Crash helmet.
Got my bike, got my helmet, got the clothes.
Lycra.
So I'm ready to go, and I did it for a little while, relatively short distances, but it's putting me off cycling to town, because I live in uphill Lincoln, so I'd have to cycle into work in the morning downhill, and but then, going home,
the worst
uphill.
Time. Yeah.
So I've been eyeing up the electric bikes.
How many gears have you got on your bike?
Six.
Well, no, you want to get more than that, you see.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There we go.
That's Ian's line. You need more than six. Just in case you thought we'd actually forgotten about Fergus's ident.
English graduate, movie critic, and Leicester City fan, Fergus Jeffs fearlessly outfoxing the Siren Radio Fellowship on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
I think we've forgot about it because Emma's, not with us today, and that normally brings it up to play.
Any fans of Emma Street, or actually hasn't died?
Leicester
we
City
hope
fan
not.
Outfoxing
she will be back.
You see, well spotted, Ian. You see, it's not just Clint Eastwood and Ian Lennox who can actually turn a phrase together.
Clint would be proud of me.
I wouldn't, precisely. As you say, Emma is hopefully just... not with us. She's physically not with us. She hasn't left us. She hasn't left the planet.
She's celebrating the good transfer window that Spurs have had.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. So, finally, Ian, in terms of transfers in, transfers out, etc., happy with the business, or is it a case of anything happened between now and 5 o'clock this evening?
I think they're trying to get another one in. Another two of them, I'm not sure.
They need a strike.
But they'll be on loans and things. I think they've done their big spending already.
And certainly big spending is a word that Mike Ashley has chosen to actually appropriate this year, which is why, obviously, in Newcastle, everybody loves him. That's what we will continue to say, unless we're just naive in that system, I don't know.
Inaccurate.
We'll talk more about Newcastle signings and various other things, hopefully in 7 days from now. Meanwhile, I think it works so well so far. Let's go for one question each. First question for Ian from you, Joe.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I have. Thank you. Yes.
Will you be joining us again?
I will be, I hope.
Exactly, in a week's time, which is splendid. It's time for the news from the Sky News Centre. Happy trails, Ian.
This is Siren Radio, Lincoln. Siren Radio.
Marvellous, and the weather today for Lincoln, it's going to be a lovely day. Highs of 23 degrees centigrade, lows of 15 degrees centigrade, and a day full of sunny intervals with a gentle breeze.
Summer, summer. would seem that as we head towards the, the end of the first quarter of the 21st century, when it comes to pensions, there are a number of challenges. In fact, a recent survey suggests that 5 million pension savers could put their retirement savings at risk, all due to scammers. And even if you think, oh, it's never going to happen to me, well, it might just happen to you. So the key thing is to beware and to actually talk about this recent finding. We're delighted to welcome two amazingly wonderful people. First of all, a psychologist. She's always good value in all sorts of ways. It's the wonderful Honey Lancaster-James. How are you, Honey?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Thank you for that introduction, Alex.
Well, it's always important to keep those lines up there. And Nicola Parrish, of course, Executive Director of Frontline Regulation for the Pensions Regulator. Good morning, Nicola. Nicola, actually, if we can come to you first, this is really quite worrying in terms of, we're offered that opportunity to effectively make our pensions double, triple, quadruple in size. And it's very much a case of maybe that's the last thing that's going to happen. In fact, you could lose everything.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why we're running this joint campaign with FCA today to stop people being subject to a pension scam and urging savers to get to know the signs of a scam so they don't hand over their hard-earned pension.
Honey, what is it about human beings that kind of, despite the fact that we kind of often think it's too good to be true, we still think, but it might just be me, it might be my chance to actually have an exotic investment or an early access to pension pot, etc. It could be me.
Well, I think there's a few things at play there. I mean, psychologically, one of the things that scammers do is they play with and they deliberately violate the kind of social norms and rules that we would expect. So we expect to be able to trust things that people tell us. Or if someone says, oh, I'm on your side, you know, I want to review your pension for you and help you and see if I can improve things for you. We think, oh, well, what's the harm in taking that advice? That sounds like it could be a good thing. And I think that's why this, you know, the Scam Smart campaign is so important and why I wanted to sort of partner with the Financial Conduct Authority and the Pension Regulator on this campaign is because people don't realise that the tactics that scammers use are actually very subtle, very sophisticated, and it does not matter who you are or how intelligent you are or how savvy you are, we can all fall prey to those tactics because they are based on basic psychology. But if you don't know what you're dealing with, you can fall prey. So for example, one of the classic techniques is that you might get a cold call, you might get a phone call from someone saying, oh, you know, we'd like to review your pension for you or for a free review. Well, what I didn't know is that, first of all, they've already broken the law because it is against the law to call you up and try to talk to you about your pension unless you are actually your, you know, that person is your pension provider. So that's the first thing. It's a massive red flag if anybody contacts you and says, we'd like to talk to you about that. But you wouldn't know that. You would think, oh, this person's helping me. And that's what we tend to assume psychologically. But also when people start saying, or we'll give you a free pension review or, you know, something like that. That, again, you start thinking, oh, well, you know, what's the harm? I'm not going to have to give my credit card details. I'm not going to have to pay for anything. But actually, you really do need to be, you know, good quality pension advice. You would really need to pay for it. So if people are offering you free advice, again, another big red flag. And the problem with a lot of this is that it does play into our basic social psychology where we expect that people are on our side and that they're just going to advise us. And they might even say to you, oh, you know, I'm just like you. I would want to check this out. And don't worry, we're affiliated with the Financial Conduct Authority, for example. And you think, oh, well, they wouldn't be telling me that if it wasn't true. But the only way to establish that for yourself is to actually go onto the Financial Conduct Authority's website and look there for the details about the Scam Smart campaign and actually look it up for yourself. That is the only way to be sure whether they are regulated.
It's really sadness to find that there are sort of six major scams and nearly a quarter of folk between 45 and 65 years of age would probably look to pursue investments in overseas properties, renewable energy bonds, forestry, storage units, biofuels. These are all kind of things which almost the media tends to produce this coalescence of saying it's all there, it's all good, so we kind of feel that we're being very worthy about this, but actually that's the last thing that's going to happen and effectively you're literally just going to be robbed.
Well, that's exactly right, because one of the things that they play on is, you know, the fact that, we all want to think that we're looking after the environment, or we all want to think that we're thinking about the future and sustainability. So, of course, they use these kinds of things to sort of reel you in, to make you think, oh, well, this would be a good thing to put my money in. But actually, these are really high-risk areas, and they're not suitable for pension investments. I mean, Nicola, you would know more about that than I would, but certainly I think psychologically they're using those tactics to make you feel like you must be a good person if you're interested in those things.
Yeah, I mean, Nicola, if we just turn to you from that point of view, I mean, what Honey said there, it does tap into something which, again, most folk like to feel that they're virtuous, that they've actually got positive things going from this point of view. And yet it seems as though, you know, with all the technologies actually there, we just need to be very, very, very careful and not make those moves.
Exactly that. I mean, anything that sounds unusual, it's guaranteeing high returns, promises that you can unlock your pension tax-free before you get to 55, or please make a decision now. This great offer is only available for you for a limited amount of time. These are all common tactics and a sign that you're dealing with a scam. And as Honey said, the most important thing you can do is to get onto the ScamSmart website, check out who you're dealing with, and only deal with an FCA authorised advisor.
And certainly that notion of early access to pension pots, nearly a fifth of 45 to 54-year-old pension savers would be interested in a company that offered to get them early access to the pension pot. Again, it's one of those areas where I suppose, you know, one could look back in hindsight and say, oh, yes, fine, etc., but it's too late then. We really need to ensure that we get the things sorted out right from the start, really.
That's the problem. And I think often they get people when they're at their most vulnerable, because certainly what the survey results have shown is that actually your chances of being scammed go up when you're actively looking at ways to improve your pension outcomes. And I think because people are worried these days about their pensions, that's what makes them sort of go looking. And unfortunately, that's when you're more likely to sort of be taken in by some of these tactics. So it really is important to educate yourself. And one of the things I really love about this campaign, actually, is that the Financial Conduct Authority have made a quiz that you can do. It's a really simple quiz. It's 6 questions, quite fun actually. I did it myself yesterday. And it just highlights just how even those of us who are, you know, who consider ourselves to be intelligent, competent people can easily get taken in by something. So I'd really suggest that you have a go at that as well.
It's also worth noting as well that actually one of the key things that as life proceeds, it gives us all sorts of stresses, challenges, etc. And sometimes whilst one might be listening to this saying, yeah, it's never going to happen to me, and so on, you never quite know. So it's important to bear in mind, always check, double check, triple check, and make sure that you don't literally just click on everything that says, yes, I'm going to respond to that because it sounds good.
Well, exactly that. And scammers don't care who they're going to prey on or how many lives they're going to wreck in the meantime when they try and get their hands on the pensions cash. It's important for people to be very confident that what they need to do is reject any unexpected offers, check on that ScamSmart website, don't be rushed into making any decisions, and really carefully consider taking advice from an FCA authorised advisor to make sure that they don't become a victim of a scam.
And just a quick reminder, the best website to go to for the FCA is, Nicola?
It's the ScamSmart website, so it's fca.org.uk/ScamSmart.
Nicola Parish, Executive Director of Frontline Regulation for the Pensions Regulator, and Honey Lancaster, James, ace psychologist. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Pleasure. Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Oh, she can't wait for what I can give. She knows what I am, but she won't believe me. Is it all okay? Will I come off the light this? I can't believe it. It's always like this, 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 like this. Kept it at bay, yes, you kept your word. Is there on your mouth, but it's not what I heard. If I follow the light that I deem the brightest, I won't believe it, it's always like this. Oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no.
clearly we had to play the Bombay Bicycle Club, given the next topic we're coming to, which of course is Cycle to Work Day. We've already found out that several people who kind of had intentions to cycle to work haven't cycled to work today. Although, I must admit, I haven't either. But the wonderful day that is Thursday, the 8th of August, the annual Cycle to Work Day, is and has returned. So we're delighted now to talk with us, to welcome to the show, Nick Chamberlain from British Cycling. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very good indeed. And from the Cycle to Work Alliance, it's the wonderful Adrian Warren. How are you, Adrian?
Very well, thank you, Nick. How are you?
Marvellous, that's right. I'm Alex, actually, not Nick, but it's all very good. We can actually talk between all sorts of other bits and pieces. Anyway, oh, names, it's a very well routine. Let's turn to Nick to start off with, if we can. This research, which after last year's success, I mean, 25,000 people pledging to take part in Cycle to Work Day. You know, we checked out with our correspondents in Newcastle, and he hadn't actually got out of bed as yet as such. No, Ian was still working on that process. We were looking around in Lincoln. What's it? I mean, is it becoming a natural thing? And will it be a case of, this will just be a case of every day will be Cycle to Work Day?
Well, that's absolutely what we hope, you know, and the whole point of these big occasions, these big days, to bring some profile to this, is again to change the conversation around how we move around, how we travel in our towns and cities, how people get to work, how people get to school, how people get around places. And, you know, we are extremely lucky in this country. We've got this wonderful Cycle to Work scheme, which allows people to get over that big barrier of owning a bicycle, because you can't go anywhere by bike if you don't have one in the first place. It allows people to get one very cheaply. But I think, you know, this research has shown the absolutely horrific cost of commuting that people across the UK are putting up with, whether they commute by, you know, train or bus, or a huge proportion who all of us, you know, sit in cars so much and burn fuel. And I think for those people who can make a choice around how they move around, we've got to make the bicycle a better option for people. And we need to use days like today to raise the profile of the bicycle as a fantastic vehicle for changing the way we move.
Certainly looking at the cost, that £100 a month is the average spent by most folk on their commute. People in cities average around about £150, etc. We're talking actually with Joe Westlake. Joe, you were obviously still with us. You say you're considering an electric bike, and with the news that effectively the government have removed the £1,000 limit, so employers can offer an uncapped amount to their employers to purchase a bike completely free of tax, will you be taking advantage of that for an electric bike possibly?
I'm not entirely sure. I've been looking at the electric bikes that are actually in Lincoln. Mm-hmm. So the ones that you can actually hire, I think in London, obviously they're called Boris bikes. I don't know. If
don't mention that word,
bikes,
please. Yeah. That'll set us on a whole new world. You know.
But yeah, they're quite interesting. The only problem with those is that to get to, because I live outside Lincoln, to get to the place where they have these stored, mm-hmm. so that you can use them to get to Lincoln, I'd have to drive in to get
okay
there.
Adrian, I mean, one of the challenges that Joe has insofar as she can cycle down to work because downhill, but it's when you get after work you cycle uphill, etc. Is there advice you can offer Joe in terms of, well, yeah, we're just going to have to install an elevator or something?
Yes, of course. So I think you know, there are many perceived barriers to why people don't cycle to work, and some of those are hills, some of those are distances. And I think with the welcomed update to the Cycle to Work scheme from the DfT, you know, now we can more than accommodate having e-bikes being accessible through the scheme, which is fantastic because that removes some of those barriers of hills and distance. So a pedal assist electric bike will really help in terms of taking away the effort that you need to put in to get up the hill. So, you know, very soon, if you take advantage of getting an e-bike, you will be able to cycle down into work and back home as well.
Good news, surely, Joe. Fergus, any thoughts or questions from your own point of view?
With the study saying that 25,000 people pledged to cycle to work last year, I know it's often brought up when it comes to the public taking up cycling. How much of it is kind of influenced by the popularity of cycling as a sport? Do you think last year was maybe influenced by like the Tour de France, you know, maybe Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome.
Mm, I mean, actually, does celebrity endorsement have a great deal to play, gentlemen, in terms of actually saying, yeah, I want to be Sir Bradley Wiggins, I want to be Geraint Thomas, and so on. Does that kind of get into a culture of cycling? Or is it a case of, look, we're talking about a form of transport, you don't have to be competitive to get to work and beat your personal best every day?
Well, I think, you know, this is a really important question, and working at British Cycling as I do, you know, we're very keen to make sure that the incredible success we've had in the sport of cycling is harnessed to, again, I think, like I said before, raise the profile of this conversation around how we use bicycles, you know. And I think the unique thing about the sport of cycling is the vast majority of people who take part in it as a sport are also passionate bike riders in all sorts of other ways. They do ride their bikes to work, you know, from BMXers to mountain bikers to weekend road cyclists, and then, you know, our great champions like Geraint Thomas that we've just seen, you know, speeding around the roads of France. So I think it is really important that, again, in this country, we have to raise the profile of how we move around in our towns and cities, how we tackle congestion and pollution and the horrendous levels of inactivity we have. And the sport of cycling, with the profile that it has, needs to play its part in making sure that we have the right conversation around how bicycles can be used to really help with some of those challenges about transport at the moment.
And for even more incentives, I see that Cycle Scheme has actually partnered up with online behaviour change platform and app Love to Ride. So good news from that point of view, in which you can also conceivably sign up to get prizes from clothing bundles to bikes. So share with us a little bit about that exciting incentive.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that the partnership with Cycle Scheme and Love to Ride was all about nudges. So it's about changing that behaviour, just as Nick's articulated. I think we can all see people on TV cycling around, but really it's about, well, how do we bring that home and change a person's behaviour from commuting to work in a car every day to actually trying to commute to work on a pedal cycle? And I think the partnership with Love to Ride is all about those continual nudges to encourage that behaviour change. And I think Cycle to Work Day is where we're hoping that's the first nudge. That's where people that cycle can encourage their colleagues to cycle with them and try it for one day. And then by signing up to the Love to Ride league table, you're able to then get continual nudges and incentivized by some of those prizes as well. And all of those prizes are all geared around helping you continue to cycle to work.
Been quite fortunate with the weather today, a day of sunny intervals with a gentle breeze. I gather over the weekend might be less conducive to actually cycling. Is that something where, clearly, when it's in the height of the British summer, I think fantastic. Once the rain starts coming and we get into the autumn and so on, people, oh, I don't know. I mean, is that, again, a challenge which, as you said, nudge behaviour, we can actually just say, well, okay, but you can actually wear waterproofs?
Look, I think, you know, absolutely. But I think the most important point here is we're trying to get millions of people to move around differently. So if everybody in the country who currently drives, you know, once a month rode bikes to work instead, that is a massive change of behaviour in this country. So, look, if it's a really horrible rainy day and you don't want to ride, don't ride. But on those days where it's fine and dry, which is a majority, get out on your bike and give it a go, you know, and that will still make a massive difference. This isn't about dictating to people around living, you know, a lifestyle that is not possible for them. This is saying nudge behaviour, change your behaviour, give something different a go. And you never know, you might really enjoy it and you might find that it's a lot easier than you thought it was going to be.
Is there a case for maybe actually having times where there are various cycling tutors and tutor groups of people who might not have been on bike for years, or maybe you've never ever been on a bike, and the last thing you really want, because it's a health and safety disaster for both motorists and indeed cyclists, is somebody who's kind of like, you know, uncertainty taking the whole things. Do you think that's something else which could possibly be installed to actually build people's confidence, whatever their age, in terms of getting in the saddle?
Yeah, well, there are thousands of cycle trainers across the country, you know, who deliver bikeability schemes for children in schools, and we have our own volunteer coaches around the country. So actually, the vast majority of local authorities in England do offer adult cycle training, free or heavily subsidised one-to-one, you know, tuition for someone who is keen to get back on a bike or start riding for the first time, and it will take you through all of those steps. So, you know, there is help available. British Cycling, we have our Commute Smart series of how-to guides and videos, which are all available both through our website and also through the Cycle Scheme website as well. So, you know, there is help, there is advice out there. And I think, you know, if people are willing to just give it a go, that's the biggest step. And then, you know, there are people out there who can help you get started.
Josephine, any thoughts from yourself? Having listened to the discussions, debates there, it's a case of, yes, I've now been inspired.
I think I've definitely been inspired. I'd like to cycle to work. I think not just, obviously, it's going to be less time in the car, means less contribution to environmental problems, but also, I think, just for general health and well-being.
Well, there we are. I think it's a winner from that point of view. Nick Chamberlain from British Cycling and Adrian Warren, Cycle to Work Alliance. Many thanks, gentlemen. Finally, where can people go to find out further information? Adrian, let's talk with you first about the Cycle to Work Alliance. Where would you point them?
So I'd absolutely point them to the cycletoworkday.org website, where we host all of the Commute Smart videos from British Cycling and all the information to really help encourage you to take that first step onto trying cycling to work for the first time. So I'd absolutely encourage everyone to go there for all the references.
And Nick, British Cycling, presumably fairly straightforward, just type it into your average search engine.
You can Google British Cycling and it should come up. And then for those who can remember something, britishcycling.org.uk/commute, and that will bring up loads more information specifically about that commute to work.
Nick and Adrian, many thanks indeed, and happy cycling, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are 9 million bicycles in Beijing. That's a fact. It's a thing we can't deny, like the fact that I will love you till I die. We are 12 billion light years from the edge, that's a guess. No one can ever say it's true, but I know that I will always be with you. I'm warm by the fire of your love every day. So don't call me a liar, just believe everything that I say. There are 6 billion people in the world, more or less, and it makes me feel quite small, but you're the one I love. Most of all,
another Croatian-born soul, Katie Melua, and 9 million bicycles in Beijing. Probably a few more now, I would have thought. No, they've taken on board Hong Kong. Let's not go there. Could be a political dynamite tumble, so we won't go there at all. In a few seconds, we'll be speaking to former England and Jamaican rugby player Dr. Rochelle Smith, who actually suffered from viral encephalitis, inflammation of the brain in 2016, but has made a flying recovery, and indeed is, as we said, a medical doctor, as well as all sorts of other wonderful things there. We'll be speaking to Dr. Rochelle Smith and Dr. Ava Easton, the Chief Executive Officer of the Encephalitis Society, on Siren Radio on the Madrid Drive Morning Edition after Oliver.
and it's something which certainly I think the Encephalitis Society is wishing to share, that maybe you're not alone in terms of just understanding what can be sorted out with this dreadful condition of viral encephalitis. And to address this, as promised, we're delighted to speak to former England and Jamaica rugby player and indeed sufferer of encephalitis, Dr. Rochelle Smith. Rochelle, welcome to the Midweek Dry Morning Edition. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, delighted to speak to your good self. We also have Dr. Ava Easton, the CEO of the Encephalitis Society. Good morning, Ava.
Hi, good morning.
Excellent. Rochelle, if we can come to you first, because your story, I mean, it's a movie needs to be made about this because it's just phenomenal. I mean, from your time at the University of West Indies onwards and then collapsing with viral encephalitis, inflammation of the brain in 2016, just talk us through your experiences and how thankfully you're with us to tell the tale today.
I'm definitely thankful. You know, this is really is a devastating condition for a lot of people who experience encephalitis, and most people who come through it, we're all not unchanged. You know, things have happened to us, and we're very, very different after what's happened. I mean, it was a very tough journey for myself, for my family, for my close friends, and for those who saw me going through it, as it is for most people who go through encephalitis. And I'm very, very happy to say that, you know, I came through it and I was able to have some excellent recovery and have the support of the Encephalitis Society as I was recovering, which was really, really great for me.
I mean, the challenges of this particular aspect, Ava, can't be underestimated. And we've heard about the way that this can impact us, etc. I mean, from your role as the Chief Executive Officer of the Encephalitis Society, are people becoming more aware about this? Or is it a case of, well, it's never going to happen to us, so we just put it to one side, effectively?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I think I'd like to say that more people are becoming aware of it. I think the Encephalitis Society works tirelessly to raise awareness of this condition. But you're absolutely right, 8 out of 10 people have never heard of this condition. And that's why we take opportunities like the Rugby World Cup and working with Rochelle as a rugby player and now a qualified doctor to raise awareness about the condition, particularly, you know, in this case for people who are travelling and hoping that they will seek travel health advice and advice around vaccinations before they travel, because some forms of encephalitis can be vaccine preventable and some forms aren't. Unfortunately, the type that Rochelle had wasn't. But, you know, we want to raise awareness of it because you're absolutely right. You know, a lot of people think it isn't going to happen to them.
Okay, we've got two fine folk in the studio. I'm sure I've got lots of fascinating questions. First of all, let's go to Josephine. Josephine, you're obviously in the process of being a PhD student here from that point of view. I mean, again, your mum as well. Any thoughts or questions for Rochelle?
I don't know an awful lot about encephalitis, I'll be honest. So I'm probably in that group of people, really. I'd heard of it, and I knew that it was some kind of swelling on the brain. Is that an accurate description?
Well, yes, that is an accurate description, and I think a lot of people understand it like that. Encephalitis itself, the word means, is an inflammation of the brain, and some people do have significant swelling to the brain when this happens to them. Encephalitis, there are different ways that you can contract it. It can either have an infection, a viral infection, which directly breaches the blood-brain barrier and attacks the brain directly. Or some people, what happens is that they have an autoimmune against receptors in the brain or after an infection, and that's almost like the body attacking the brain in error and leading to the inflammation through that route. So there's two different main ways that we understand that it happens to people.
Okay, and the difference between, obviously you've got meningitis, which is obviously a lot probably better known in terms of the public than encephalitis. I assume that's the difference between those two. Am I right in thinking is that meningitis is more to do with the lining around the brain, whereas encephalitis is the brain itself?
Correct, yes, that's correct.
Ava, just turning on to your good self, I mean, that's an excellent point that I think Joe made there, that meningitis, we kind of, every so often there seems to be a sort of concern, and I remember when I was an undergraduate that there were people saying, oh, we'd beware of this and the ways in which the contagion, etc. Is a similar thing sort of present with encephalitis, that actually it is a case of just raising the awareness of folk and actually being aware of what needs to be done to actually deal with this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, we do want to raise awareness. unfortunately, as Rochelle's already alluded to, this is a particularly complex condition that can be caused in a variety of ways. And if you think about all the infections that exist in the world, all the bugs, some of which we get in the United Kingdom, some of which occur only in countries outside of the UK, you know, this is a really complex condition, and it's really difficult to put out in the public domain one thing that people can look out for. It's not that simple, and if it was, we would have done that. We worked tirelessly to help raise awareness around the condition. We have World Encephalitis Day on the 22nd of February every year, and that's by doing campaigns like this around the Rugby World Cup and getting people to think about travel health and vaccine preventable types of encephalitis is another way of getting that message out there.
Fergus, when you listen to this, any thoughts from your own perspective?
We were just discussing there, obviously, the differences between meningitis and encephalitis, and how it's a lot of people. I mean, I myself, I'd heard of encephalitis, but I didn't exactly know what it was. What do you think may have led to encephalitis becoming a kind of forgotten viral infection? Mm. So people maybe think more about meningitis than encephalitis.
I mean, certainly, Rochelle, if we can briefly just come to you just interjecting, I mean, you had to literally learn to speak and read again. And again, the line, it's a wonderful sort of piece in the Voice newspaper, you almost died, but now you're a doctor. I mean, that's the headline. But I mean, for people who haven't been through that, would have thought, whoa, that's phenomenal, basically, in terms of how impactful this has actually been on your good self.
Thanks for that. Just to address what was said before, I think the reason why encephalitis, I don't think it's become a forgotten condition. I think it's just that there's a lack of understanding, because as Ava has already alluded to, it is a very complex condition, and there are multiple different facets in terms of how a person can present. Whereas meningitis, the symptoms are quite, they tend to be the same across bacterial and viral meningitis, and so therefore it's much easier to put out in the public what to look for that. However, for encephalitis, the symptoms are so varied and the signs are so varied that it can be particularly difficult to identify that. And then to come to myself, you know, I think when I first, for mine it was quite an acute presentation, you know, I collapsed and started having seizures fairly soon after. Mm. And I think people didn't really know at that time, even with the seizures, what was really going on, and it took an extensive amount of time and efforts by both the doctors in Jamaica as well as doctors back here in London to be able to come to a conclusive diagnosis in terms of what was to happen. And even then, to then try and do the treatment, it was very difficult. We had lots of different treatment modalities, mainly aimed at the symptoms that I was having, which was mainly the seizures at that time, in terms of as opposed to being able to cure it, being that it's viral and not bacterial.
And certainly being in a coma for over 2 weeks, as I said, I mean, it's a movie just waiting to be happened, but I'm sure that we'll talk about that at another time. Now, clearly, we're talking about this with the Rugby World Cup in Japan. CCAT specialist travel health advice before travelling. It's probably advisable for all travellers, presumably, to do that. And Ava, would you recommend that effectively, when it comes to at least trying to prevent this this dreadful condition, that effectively people do actually make sure that they are, can they be fully immunised, or at least precautions are taken to obviously prevent people going through what Rochelle obviously went through?
Yeah, I mean, some forms of encephalitis can be vaccine preventable, and there's a couple of those types that occur across Southeast Asia in the Pacific Islands, for example, Japanese encephalitis, and then there's another cause called tick-borne encephalitis that occurs across some of Asia and across some of Europe. And so those types of encephalitis can be prevented. But also, Japan recently has had two measles outbreaks in 2018 and 2019. So people need to think about that. So, you know, we just want people to think about it. We don't want to scare anybody. I think if you're just flying in to go and watch a match in one of the cities and flying back out again, I think that's absolutely fine. But I think realistically, a lot of people who are going all the way to Japan are going to be extending their stay, and they're going to be going and seeing some of this beautiful country. And that means going into the countryside, and in the countryside, that is where mosquitoes and ticks often exist, and people may be bitten by them, and it's those that can carry some of the types of encephalitis that we've been talking about that can be prevented by vaccine. Unfortunately, some types can't, and the type that Rochelle had couldn't be. But we want to just try and raise this awareness through the Rugby World Cup campaign, so that, you know, people don't have to die unnecessarily, and those that do still survive the condition don't have to have, you know, the horrendous level of disability that we see in some of these types of encephalitis.
Yeah. And a web address that you'd recommend people to go to find out further details about the Encephalitis Society possibly would be?
Yeah, if people go to encephalitis.info/travel, there they can read a bit more about some of the things that we've been talking about, and they can also on there find their nearest travel clinic as well, and make an appointment.
I've got to say also, Rochelle, congratulations once again on not just graduating, but actually graduating with a prize for triple honours from the University of the West Indies. Triple honours. It's awesome stuff from that point of view. And many thanks for joining us today. Do you ever, do you ever sort of feel, yeah, I miss those days for Saracens? Do you ever sort of feel that you're going to pick up the lozenge-shaped ball again? Or is it a case of, no, I'll just stay away from that now. I've done that bit.
I think for me, it's taking on a different role now. You know, in Jamaica, which is where I'm working right now, I'm trying to work with the Tiny Tots Rugby, so the next generation of the rugby players coming through, as well as Jamaica's going to be playing in both the Rugby League and Rugby Union World Cup, so to help them along those journeys as well.
Fantastic. Great stuff. Again, I've got to ask the question, who would you like to actually play you in a movie version of the Rochelle Smith story? I mean, it's got to be written. I mean, it's awesome, this.
Oh, I think there's quite a few people that are there on the shortlist, so we'll just have to look and see who comes along in the long run.
And obviously we'll need somebody to actually portray yourself as well, Ava, obviously, as a CEO of the Encephalitis Society, so we'll work on the movie there. It'll be Academy Award winning, I've got no doubt. Dr. Ava Easton.
It's got to be Emma Thompson for me.
Yeah. I think we're in agreement there, okay? Emma, we'll start the negotiations now. Dr. Ava Easton from the Encephalitis Society and Rochelle Smith, many thanks indeed. Take care and stay healthy.
Thank you very much for having us. Check it out. Was that the intro I should have been in?
Oh, boo boo boo, let him.
Sea moon. Is she? Sea moon to me. How come no one older than me ever seems to understand the things I wanna do? It will be L7 and I'd never get to heaven if I fill my head. Sea moon, is she? Oh, sea moon.
back in the 20th century, On Your Bike was something which was attributed to a former Conservative minister, Norman Tebbit, I believe. But moving into the 21st century, it takes on a slightly different meaning because it would seem that a quarter of British people haven't ridden a bike in over a decade. One in five have never actually been on a run in their life as well. So how can we actually change this? Well, maybe, just maybe, the C word could come into play, because a third have actually said that they would be inspired to get back on their bike for charity. Now, to talk about one of the great opportunities that's coming up in September to actually work through this and indeed address the whole system, two fabulous folk. First of all, Director of Refugee Support at British Red Cross, that's the wonderful Alex Fraser. How are you, Alex?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks.
Excellent. And indeed, a former refugee himself, and indeed a person who's had a passion for running and has had a whole range of things, was actually a representative of the athletes, a refugee team at the Athletics World Championships in London, the wonderful Kadar Omar. How are you, Kadar?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Now, combination of the Red Cross and running and packaging from that point of view. Kadar, first of all, would you like to just share with us your own particular experience and case study in terms of, you know, how an event that's coming up, which we're going to talk about today, can be really important when it comes to obviously helping out refugees and our fellow brothers and sisters on the planet? Can you just share with us your own sort of experience in terms of how you got involved with running as well, and how the Red Cross sort of impacted on yourself?
Well, I started running in Ethiopia. As a kid, I used to look after goats and cows. Because I'm a farmer child, it has put my stamina and strength. Unfortunately, we have to run through our life with, along with my uncle and my brother, from persecution and conflict in Ethiopia. And we came to Kakuma refugee camp. I was like any other child in the refugee camp who playing in that most time, playing in the frustrating heat of Kakuma refugee camp. Actually, my dream of running was born in the refugee camp. That's when I had discovered I have passion for running and I have hobby life. So I start working hard from there, because without putting into work, you will not reach anywhere. I've run so many different, and since then my life has changed through running. I found life through running, and British Red Cross have been beyond supportive to me. They have helped me so many ways. They have provided me with sport kits, and you know, encouraged me in many ways. If it wasn't from their in kindness, support, and encouragement, and recognize my talent, I couldn't have been able to continue running in this country and realize my potential of for running.
Well, Kadar, I mean, that's a wonderful, very powerful story, it has to be said. If you can tell them to yourself, Alex, I mean, this is very much at the heart of, obviously, what the Red Cross actually is involved with. And Kadar's a way in which, you know, the tragedy and the huge challenges that are actually faced when you've got persecution, you've got violence, you've got a whole range of things that are actually there, you're having to flee your country and so on. Maybe there is just a glimmer of hope, actually, that can be provided from this point of view, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, incredible. Humble people like Kadar, you know, are sadly having to leave their homes every day because of terrible conflict and persecution. And, you know, on having to do that, you know, the choice that they have in front of them is so difficult and dangerous, and they have to take these often horrific journeys to find a place of safety. And the Red Cross, we help people, you know, across the world and here in the UK to settle into new communities, to reunite as families, and to understand what their rights and entitlements are. And, you know, you said earlier about, you know, about brothers and sisters and about humanity, and that's really what we're talking about here, just thinking about our fellow human beings and what we can all do to help show solidarity for people who have lost so much through no choice of their own. And so this September, we are running an initiative called Miles for Refugees, which is just one of the ways that people can help. And, you know, our survey showed that people want to get more active, but often they need some motivation to do that. And people like Kadar, their stories are incredibly powerful. And if you are inspired by stories like Kadar's, you can get involved, get active, show solidarity, and help raise some funds to help the Red Cross and its work it's doing to support people who have experienced so much difficult trauma in their lives. And it's really easy to do. All you need to do is go to Google, search up Miles and Refugees, and it'll give you three simple steps for how you sign up We want people to just get involved and have some fun. And it isn't about having to run a marathon or be the sort of, the best athlete in your local town. It's about setting your own challenge. And for some of us, if we've never run before, maybe running a mile by the end of the month would be a real achievement. But clock up all the miles that you'll do along the way. So we just think this is one of the great ways that people can, themselves benefit through some improved health and well-being by getting active, but also showing important solidarity for people like Kedar, who have lost, so much, but what they haven't lost is their dignity and their passion and their talents. And we know there's so much kindness and compassion out there, and we're just saying to people, here's just one other way that you can help, get involved, get active, show solidarity, and help us raise some funds for this incredibly important cause.
Absolutely. Of course, it's Miles for Refugees. It's interesting to see that you can actually run the distance between Calais and London, not across the English Channel, because that would be silly. It's 108 miles, but at least you've actually said that you can cycle as opposed to run 1,000 miles between Damascus to Athens, because that might be a bit too much even for the Forrest Gumps of us, basically, to actually do Damascus to Athens. Although, again, it is a journey that people actually do take, and I think it's significant that that's actually part of the whole process. Alex, would you be getting on your Lycra and running shorts yourself?
Do you know, I will. And, earlier this year, I met this incredible group of women at one of our projects who told me about all the things that they'd experienced, having to leave their homes and their families, having suffered terrible violence and persecution, and somehow, they remain hopeful about the future. And I was so inspired by them. I said, you know what? I am going to do my bit. I'm going to go out and run the Hackney Half Marathon. Now, you can't see me on radio, and that's probably a good thing, but I am no athlete, It took me 3 hours to run this thing. I say run, but I was sort of just about struggling along. But, the point is, I'm no athlete, but what inspired me were these incredible women. And I hope people listening to this, they'll be inspired as well to get their shoes on, get out there and do their bit.
Hashtag Miles for Refugees, of course, is the place to go to. Also, the British Red Cross for details from that point of view. Again, it's happening in September, so you've got a good few weeks to actually get yourselves sorted out and done and dusted for that. Any final thoughts you'd like to share with us, either Alex or indeed Kedar?
Just to say thank you for everyone who's ever shown any, solidarity and compassion. And, it's easy, as you say, hashtag Miles for Refugees, search up Miles Refugees, sign up, show solidarity, get involved, and thank you to everybody.
Brilliant. I'd be tempted to actually say could horse have kilometres for refugees, but maybe with all the European challenges we're having at present with Brexit, etc., best not even go there, basically. We'll keep to imperial measurement, shall we?
Yeah.
Miles for Refugees. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thanks ever so much.
Yeah.
No, absolutely no problems. Heartfelt interview there with Kadar Omar, refugee, and Alex Fraser, and Miles for Refugees. Well worth getting involved with, as indeed are several of the other things we talked about today. The Cycle to Work Alliance, thanks to Nick Chamberlain and Adrian Warren, Dr. Ava Easton, and of course Rochelle Smith, Honey Lancaster James and Nicola Parrish, Ian Lennox, Richard Fitzwilliams, and Gabriella Peralta, and in the studio, Josephine Westlake. Have you enjoyed the production?
I have, thank you very much.
Has it psyched you up to actually do volume two of From Mountains to Molecules?
Yeah, I'm super excited, especially now we've got Excellent. Fergus joining us.
Yeah. Fergus Jeffs, fashionably late for the Midweek Drama Morning Edition, but already, sneak preview, I've already sent you the running order for next Wednesday's Midweek Drive. Mm. Awesome. We've got magicians. We've got links with Chinese overseas tutors. We've got our Belgium correspondent, Fiene Heal, coming back to us. We've got Robin Pierce, got Phil Dennis. We've got Greg Marshall from the band Morrissey and Marshall. It's going to be, quite frankly, awesome. As indeed will next Thursday's Midweek Drive Morning Edition, where we welcome back Stephanie Romoshevsky, amongst others. That's it. Don't forget, 7 o'clock this evening, in the Carousel scenario, we've got the Stone Tapes, which is going to be awesome. It's the 50th edition of the Stone Tapes radio production with Sam Stone, of course, and David J. Howe, and some fantastic contributors from that point of view. What shall we say today? Happy Thursday. It's cliche, but it says it as it is, really. So 1, 2, 3, 4, the listener to Siren Radio from Fergus, Joe, and myself, Alex Levchuk. 1, 2, 3.
Happy Thursday.
FM. Online.